Hey, I'm Kevin.
Hey, I'm Johnny E.
Tune into our radio show, Philly Rock Live.
We play the classic hard rock and metal
from the 70s and 80s.
We grew up on.
We play the new music those same bands are making today.
And we play new music from around the world.
Not to mention the great bands from our own local scene. You will not hear a mix of music like this anywhere else.
If it kicks ass,
we play it. Philly Rock Live.
Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. Philly time.
On PhillyRockRadio.com. Listen online with your mobile device or even your smart speaker.
And now, it's time for another edition of the Sports and Metal Podcast. We talk hard-hitting sports and bone-crunching metal. Sports and metal. Because sports and metal go better together. Now here's your host, Jason Voorhees. And Aaron Savage.
Ooh, yeah!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Sports and Metal Podcast. We are your hosts, as always. This is Aaron Savage with me right over there, my partner in crime, Mr. Jason Voorhees. What's going on, Jay?
What's up, buddy?
Not much, my man. Before we get started, I want to just give a shout out to our sponsors. First and foremost, longtime sponsor, La Terrain Watches. Make sure you visit their website, www.laterrain.com. That's www.laterraine.com. You're going to want to use our promo code SNM. That's the letters SNM as in sports and metal. And you're going to save 10% off your purchase at checkout. Also want to give a shout out to our other sponsor, BetUS.com. There's a link right below me here in the video. You want to use that link and you're going to get 125% bonus on your first bet. If you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcast after the episode goes live, then you'll be able to get the link. I'm going to put it in the descriptions on there. Anyway, without further ado, let's get started. Jason, if you've been paying attention to me on Twitter, well, before we even get into it, obviously we're in the home stretch, NFL stretch, so why don't we drop on that first? I'll get into the other thing I was going to get into, but let's just start here. So NFL, we're getting into the home stretch. Last few weeks, this is a big weekend this week. We finally have Saturday football back. I don't know about you, Jay, but I am pumped.
I mean, Saturday football, I mean, it's got to be one of the best because I'm not a huge college football guy myself. I know there's a lot of people that are, but I'm obviously diehard NFL. So
me too.
To get football on Saturday is
and Sunday. It's awesome.
Treat. Yes. You know, it's just you got to hope, though, that these games are like somewhat, you know, competitive and fun to watch because sometimes the teams that are in there, you know, I know tomorrow I think Baltimore is playing. Not that they are, you know, Baltimore's not a bad team, but they're not like, you know, with Lamar Jackson not being there, it's just not the same, you know, flavor as.
Big game for me tomorrow night. We got the Dolphins Bills at Buffalo. They're calling for a foot of snow, 25 degrees, 15 mile per hour winds. Ooh, but you know what? If history tells us, the Dolphins have had some of their best games in those conditions. They have 700 rushing games in the history of the franchise. Three of them, I believe, are in Buffalo in the snow. You had Ricky Williams, the team record 228 rush yards back in 2002. In a game, believe it or not, Miami lost by 17 points. How do you have Ricky Williams rush for 228 yards in the snow and still lose the game by 17 points? But that was one. Then you had Reggie Bush had his 203-yard game in Buffalo in the snow. And you had Jay Ajayi. It wasn't in the snow, but it was like 35 degrees in Buffalo. He had his 200-yard game. So Dolphins are going to have to run the ball if they're going to have a shot here. You know, but, dude, you know, it's possible. But your Dolphins are going to be heavy, heavy underdogs. And, dude, we've talked about it here a couple weeks back. If you had asked me, Tua was my MVP to that point. And when I said that, you had all these people on Twitter, like, getting up in arms. And people missed a point. And it's kind of going to lead into what I'm going to get into here. People missed a point. My post at that time was, to this point, Tua is the NFL MVP. And I stand by that statement at that time. At that time, I believe, and the only guy I thought that had an argument with Tua would have been your boy Jalen Hurts. these two guys, to me, were the MVPs. Now, obviously, Pat Mahomes has all the numbers to be an MVP. But as we've discussed, I think this year, when we talked about this, Tua was so important to what Miami was doing at that time. And plus, coming back from the concussion, he was undefeated as the starter to that point. What more do you have to do to be an MVP? And Jalen Hurts, at that time, had not quite the passing numbers that Tua did. I just thought Tua was the MVP at that point. Well, Tua's had a terrible couple of weeks. Jalen Hurts is without question my MVP now. If you're going to tell me who's the NFL MVP to this point, it's Jalen Hurts. You ask me 2 weeks from now, it's probably still going to be Jalen Hurts because he's done so much now. But it could change, which is where we get to my next point. I made my Super Bowl pick today. And I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but I posted that I thought the 49ers are going to be this year's Super Bowl champion. And the reason being, I'm just kind of getting a vibe from them that reminds me of the 2001 Patriots. And what do I mean by that? Here's my exact post. The 49ers are my Super Bowl pick. Here we go. Let's bring up the next banner we have here for the show. Purdy, real or pretender. But anyway, here's my Twitter post. The 49ers are my Super Bowl pick. There's something very Tom Brady-ish about Brock Purdy this season. Now, do you get what I'm saying here, Jay? Do you get the point that I'm making? Now, you could argue all day that the Eagles are your Super Bowl pick, and you have every right to do that because, A, you're an Eagles fan. I'd expect nothing less, unless they sucked, and that'd be ridiculous. You'd be in a homer. But no, the Eagles are a bona fide Super Bowl threat. You're going to make an argument against the Niners. It's the Eagles, and you know I might be in the minority picking the Niners. I probably am. The Eagles are a Super Bowl favorite. They're right there. The Chiefs. I think the Bills are not where those teams are as far as favorites. The Bills haven't impressed me to that level. The Eagles are a bona fide Super Bowl contender. And Jalen Hurts, as I've stated, now is my MVP after a couple of bad weeks from Tua and Jalen Hurts just continuing to play at an elite level, even better than he had played up until the point where I said Tua was MVP 2 weeks ago. Jalen Hurts has just like basically done nothing to make himself not be the MVP. As I've said here before and on social media, it's Jalen Hurts' award to lose. But the reason I'm seeing something with this 49ers team has nothing to do with the Jalen Hurts argument. And that's why I'm bringing this up, because there were some people that were up in arms on social media that I made this post, and I'm like knocking Jalen Hurts. No, people are so wrapped up in things sometimes that they don't see the point. I wasn't even thinking about Jalen Hurts when I made my post. My post is, I'm seeing a similarity between this Niners team and that 2001 Patriots team, meaning, let's go back to 2001. The Patriots had just signed Drew Bledsoe to like a $100 million extension, which is still a lot of money, but back then that was a shitload of money 20 years ago. You know, he was their franchise quarterback, and what did he get hurt in week two? Brady took over, and everybody's like, who's Tom Brady? Nobody knew who Tom Brady was. All he did is run with it. They went to the Super Bowl. They were huge underdogs in the Super Bowl against the greatest show on turf, the Rams, and they won that Super Bowl. And people still, in the following years, when the Patriots maintained that level of success, you know as well as I, Jay, because we're old enough to have been there. We remember it. Let's be honest here, dude. The first 4 or 5 years of Brady's career, all the talk was that they win despite Tom Brady. He's a system quarterback. He has an 85 QB rating, blah, blah, blah. He has no arm. It wasn't until later that Brady started putting up some gaudy numbers and like changing, flipping the script a little bit. Like, not only does this guy win, but he puts up massive numbers. Well, I'm seeing a similarity. The Niners, you traded all these picks to draft Trey Lance. You had Jimmy G, who was your franchise prior to that. So Brock Purdy is like the third string quarterback. He was the last guy picked in the draft. Nobody knows who Brock Purdy is. At least they didn't 2 weeks ago. Trey Lance gets hurt opening week. Jimmy G now, he's in. The Niners are a very good team. Jimmy G, when they got hurt, I believe they were 7-4. He's hurt. Now it's Brock Purdy's show. Everyone goes, who is this guy? Mr. Irrelevant, blah, blah, blah. Dude. They're 2-0 since. They're 9-4. And they've looked stronger than they have all season. Now, this doesn't mean I'm saying Brock Purdy's better than Jalen Hurts or Brock Purdy's this or that. What it means is I'm seeing a similarity to Tom Brady in 2001. People are saying the same stuff. Who is this guy? He's got no arm. They win despite him. And some of that may be true. The Niners win because of their defense, which is why when Jimmy G got hurt, you know that I said Niners are still going to win because they don't win because of their QB. So you know that I said that. But they also win because they have a rejuvenated Christian McCaffrey. Let's not trivialize that. The guy's a beast. He's back to being what he was. Now you've got him on a team with a great quarterback, good coaching. It's all there. But here's what it is about Purdy, though. He shows a poise that none of us could have expected, Jay. And you have to admit that. That's why I think he could be the magic ingredient to make this Niners team the team to win the Super Bowl this year. Again, you have every right to disagree, and I can't fault you for that because your argument is fair. But again, it has nothing to do with knocking any other player or anybody else's MVP candidacy. It has nothing to do with anybody except Brock Purdy and the 49ers. And again, elite defense, rejuvenated, possibly best player in the league in Christian McCaffrey, and a quarterback that is making no mistakes. Dude, you look at the numbers. They're not gaudy numbers. He's not throwing for 300 yards. He's throwing for 180, 220 yards. But he's completing his passes. He's making every play. He's not turning the ball over. And he's shown a great pocket presence. I've seen, he avoids the blitz. He's moving around in the pocket. He's not stiff. The guy's got no fear. There's something to be said for this guy, Jay. And I think he's real. I don't think he's a pretender. What are your thoughts on all this? I want to hear it.
I mean, first and foremost, I can't disagree with your premise because I see where you're going with it. And I do see a little bit of a similarity. The big difference for me is that Tom Brady sat for a full year his first season. This is Brock Purdy's first year in the NFL.
Which might make the Purdy thing even more impressive.
But Tom Brady also started 14 or 15 games that season. So while I see what you're going with this and while I can agree with it to a certain extent, let's not exaggerate here and get all excited about a guy that's played against, let's face it, Miami, and you would say it yourself, Miami's defense has been awful this year.
Okay,
100%. So is the Seahawks defense. So he's not faced, playoff caliber defenses up until this point. So let me see a couple games more like that before I make the assessment that you are. I'm not disagreeing with where you're kind of going with it, but I guess my thing is that I believe it's kind of too soon to go to that.
And that's fair. That's not wrong.
Because he could virtually fall off a cliff the next game and
100%.
Make three interceptions and then you wouldn't be making that statement. But like I said, I'm not going to crucify you for making a post where you basically – it's not like you picked some team out of the woodwork and you were like, oh, this is a Super Bowl contender. Because in my opinion, the 49ers probably are, if not the main competition to the Eagles – for a title, because other than the Chiefs and, maybe the Cowboys, but I don't even think I think the Cowboys are overrated. And that's not me being a homer. That's just me being.
It might be, but
that's
okay.
The Cowboys and knowing their history of how they kind of, shit the bed come playoff time. But nonetheless, I get what you were saying with your point. So I wasn't up in arms, but I know people get up in arms about it. And it's like a lot of times you got to look at like what was written and what was the context, and the context that you were making was basically like Brock Purdy's a guy that nobody knew about. He was called Mr. Irrelevant. He was the last pick in the draft. I mean, and he's now, had a small sample size, albeit, but it's still a sample size of doing, magical things and making the 49ers win in spite of the loss of, Debo Samuel, who's probably
Debo was out of there. Yes.
CMC, yes, is a beast and he's rejuvenated. But to me, I think Debo is still their best and most dynamic playmaker, and he's out.
Yeah.
So with all of that being said, I could totally understand and agree with not agree, but I can understand what you were trying to get.
Well, here's the thing. You got to realize this. Let's go back to the point. All it was a comparison based on similarities. And obviously, we're all entitled to make a prediction, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's why people make money gambling. That's why gambling exists, right? That's why everybody wants to make their bold prediction and get attention. I just have a feeling, I have a gut feeling that this Niners team is going to win the Super Bowl. And it's based off of them being a good team, having a great defense, having playmakers, and having transitioned seamlessly from quarterback to quarterback. You don't see that very often. And the biggest thing I take away from this is nobody's arguing. Brock Purdy has had a very small sample size. But, dude, there's been guys that have won Heisman trophies that have looked like deer in headlights in their first few games in the NFL. Brock Purdy hasn't. He's looked like he belongs. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. He looks like he's not in fear of the situation. He looks like he belongs.
And I can't disagree with you. I guess and I guess I don't want to be a homer here, but the only reason I would say that I really can't realistically see the 49ers winning a Super Bowl.
Because you think the Eagles are going
to
win it.
And it's because the Eagles are going to have home field advantage. And for the 49ers to have to come here in the cold is a big difference than Eagles having to travel to San Francisco.
There's no right or wrong
in good
here.
Weather.
There's no right or wrong.
But
it's fair.
On any given Sunday, or if a playoff game's on Saturday, it could be any given Saturday, but any given week, teams can lose in the playoffs, and I get that. So I'm not going to argue that the 49ers are a strong team. I'm just saying pump the brakes a little bit on Brock Purdy until I see a little bit more. If he goes out and beats, like, I don't know if they have any good teams coming up. I haven't looked at their schedule. I would have to pull up their schedule. But if he, like, beat the Bills or something, then I might be like, okay, now I'm intrigued. Color
me 100%. That would be, like, next level.
But
you know, I also go back to another point, dude. It's like I go back to this being just a simple comparison between two teams that have great similarities. And another thing I look at is I just feel like you get a lot of these people. It shows our age. I really do think that. I think sometimes I take for granted that somebody that I'm responding to or that's responding to me on social media might be 22 years old.
And they might,
and they don't even remember Tom Brady back in 2001, unless maybe a highlight video. They weren't there. We were there. Like, and I know it's crazy to sound this way because I can't believe how much time has passed that it actually is 21 years ago.
We're old.
It seems like yesterday, bro. It really does to me. It seems like it just happened. But, dude, Tom Brady wasn't considered the GOAT 20 years ago. He was a guy that everybody thought sucked. And you had the minority that was like, no, Tom Brady's really good. I'm telling you, I like Tom Brady a lot. And you had like this, like, back and forth. Oh, he's a system guy. Nobody today is saying Tom Brady's a system guy. Nobody today is disputing Tom Brady's greatness. Nobody today is saying Tom Brady doesn't have an arm. But they all said it back in 2001. They all said it. They all said it. And if you're 22 years old coming at me on social media and you've never seen him play back then, I don't know what else to say because you just don't get it. You don't get the point. You didn't catch it. It went over your head. Look this. Woo. It went over your head. That's it, bro. That is it. That's my point. That's my point.
I mean, speaking of Tom Brady, I mean, you kind of nailed a couple points. Like, he won 3 Super Bowls and people were still calling him a system quarterback.
Like, about. He was like,
he was not considered an elite or star quarterback.
And it took a long time for him to get that credit.
Which what that tells me, though, too, is that a lot of times I think, you know, we have this – I'm not saying we, me, meaning me and you. I'm saying I believe the football community and football fans sometimes have a tendency to look at these quarterbacks and think, like, in terms of, like, well, everyone is either elite or they suck. And it's not that way.
Great point.
There's only a few of elite quarterbacks, and there's only a few that really suck because really to make the NFL, you have to be somewhat good. I mean, take Geno Smith, for example. Geno Smith is the epitome of a quarterback that everyone thought was garbage.
Yeah, and look what he's doing.
And look what he's doing right now. Like, he's having – talk about MVP candidates. I mean, I know he's not mentioned, and he's not going to win it, but his numbers are pretty impressive this year. And I would say, oh, my God, Geno Smith, he looks like a damn good quarterback, and he's 30 years old. Now, he's not really had a starting opportunity to the point where he could run with it.
Well,
Well, think about when he did years ago. Younger. He was on the Jets.
Exactly. Garbage. A garbage team. So I think a lot of times you got to kind of look at that, look at the context. Like I said, quarterbacks, we know, and I get it, every team is chasing Mahomes. They want the next Mahomes. They want, you know, they want this, they want that. But not every quarterback will be that. There's not that many that are that way. That why do you think back in the day there was Dan Marino, Joe Montana, in that era, you know, Warren.
Dude, you know what? I want to go with this a little. I want to go with this. You took the words out of my mouth. Like, you, let's just, before I forget this Dan Marino, Joe Montana thing, you're right. But back then, and to the point you're making, I don't remember when we grew up, like, we all recognized the greatness of Joe Montana. We all recognized the greatness of Dan Marino. We all recognized the greatness of a few guys. But everybody was seemed to be okay with their quarterbacks when their teams were successful. Like, I don't remember anybody caring if Phil Simms was Dan Marino, right? When the Giants won Super Bowls, I don't remember anybody comparing Phil Simms to Joe Montana or Dan Marino, nor do I remember them caring. I think we live in this world now where it's instant gratification, social media, everybody thinks they know everything. Back then, you put on a sports radio show, maybe. There was maybe two in town. Maybe you put the news on. Maybe the only sports 24-hour show then was SportsCenter, right? And that was kind of new. That was a new concept, an all-day sports channel, ESPN. It wasn't like today. So now it's like, to your point, everybody expects everybody to draft the next Patrick Mahomes. You've said it. And it's like, if you have a quarterback that's good and you win, it's not good enough. It's not. It's not good enough to the masses that want to compare everybody to everything. And you know what, dude? To that point, I had a guy like talking back and forth with me on Twitter today saying, oh, you know, he hasn't been impressed with that offense. Talking about Purdy and the Niners. He hasn't been impressed. They weren't moving the offense. Like, and I'm thinking to myself, well, what are you looking for, bro? They're winning football games. Purdy was 10 for 10 in the second quarter. He didn't have an incompletion until midway through the second quarter. Like, what do you want him to do? Does he have to throw an 80-yard bomb to make you happy? Does he have to be, you know, Justin Fields and rushing for 150 yards? Like, no. Like, when did this become, like, the norm that this is the expectation? That's crazy. And guess what? A lot of these quarterbacks that put up these gaudy numbers and these great athletic feats don't win. They don't always win.
Well,
what has Lamar Jackson won? What did Michael Vick win? Great athletes, but what did they have? They won. There's exceptions. Patrick Mahomes is like a freak, but even Patrick Mahomes, you can make the argument as underachieved as far as winning, right? You can make that argument. Patrick Mahomes had this insane rookie season and he set the bar so high. You have to ask yourself, is he ever going to have that season again? Sometimes that works against you.
Well, that
works against you sometimes.
This kind of talking about this is kind of getting me fired up. And I'm like, I brought up Geno Smith a few minutes ago. I'm wondering, even in Seattle's case, you know, their fans are going to want, oh my God, we want a star quarterback. Geno Smith, he's not a star quarterback. Dude, they're winning with him and he's doing well.
Yeah, but in fairness, that doesn't necessarily mean they shouldn't draft a quarterback because he is on the wrong side of 30.
I'm not saying that.
But yeah, I mean, if you had, like, say Geno Smith was 20. Well, I'll give a better example. Better example that's relevant right now. Detroit traded Matthew Stafford to the Rams for Jared Goff. Now, granted, the Rams won a Super Bowl last year, so they got everything they needed out of that trade. But you can easily make the argument that the Lions have done equally well in that trade because I don't think – Matthew Stafford's career could be over. Matthew Stafford's probably not going to play the rest of this year. His wife wants him to retire. Now, I don't think he's going to retire. I'm sure he'll be back next year. But let's be honest. Matthew Stafford's on limited time in the NFL. He's on the downslope. He's not going to be playing that long. I don't believe at all. His wife has gone on her podcast and said as much. He's not going to be the next Tom Brady playing until he's 45. Meanwhile, the Lions have a guy, Jared Goff, who became totally disrespected, underappreciated. Same storylines, right? He's got no arm. He's no good. He's a system QB. All the same stuff that you heard about a Tom Brady. And again, I'm not saying Jared Goff is Tom Brady. I'm not trying to bring him into this party conference. No, I'm just using this as an example. But all of a sudden, the Lions, who were in a position of thinking that Jared Goff was just this holdover quarterback until they found their franchise QB, have maybe found their franchise QB in a Jared Goff. and he's 26 years old.
Jared Goff was a first round pick.
I know that, but he did fall off, dude.
No, I'm just saying, but he's a guy like that's a case where I would not give up on somebody when they were a first round pick.
But that's not the point. The point is the narrative was that Jared Goff was a holdover. That's the narrative. There's no arguing or debating it. That was the narrative.
I know, but
Jared Goff was a holdover.
The point I'm making is that in this, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? In this, you know, results now based fan bases, you know, people wanting instant gratification. That was the word I was looking for. You know, first and foremost, most of those people probably still want to go for a quarterback,
if the Lions make the playoffs and do something, I think they're going to extend Goff, and I think the fan base is going to love it. And guess what? That's fine. That's the way it should be. Like, and what does Jared Goff need to do? Like, it goes back to my original point. Why does everyone have to be this guy that can, on any given moment, have this amazing athletic feat? Why can't a guy just be a good quarterback? Why does it, like, Phil Simms was a good quarterback for the Giants in the 80s. They won Super Bowls, right? I'm saying. You got the gist of it. Not everybody needs to live in this crazy world, but we're getting off on a tangent here. But you get my point, right?
It's instant gratification. Everyone wants the next fix.
Yep. Anyway, why don't we switch gears a little bit? Since this is sports and metal, let's do a little metal talk, Jay. Dude, John Corabi, I think it's like every week I'm reading a new story about him talking about Motley Crue. You know, and I'm not saying the stuff he's saying is inaccurate and he might be onto something, but my question is why? Like, what has gotten him so obsessed with Motley Crue lately? You know what I'm talking about. You actually sent me the article. I had read a lot of the stuff previously because he said it on other podcasts and he's done other interviews. But just to bring you up to speed here, if you're watching, you know, as everyone knows, Motley Crue announced in October that Mick Mars was going to be stepping down from touring with the band permanently. He's had that degenerative back condition for all these years. I hate saying it, so I try to avoid it. Ankylosing spondylitis. I don't think I said it right. But long story short, it's been a debilitating life for Mick Mars. That's why he's hunched over. So he finally announced his retirement from touring. Motley Crue says he's still in the band for all intents and purposes. He's just not touring. But he's a member in every other respect. So Crue announced John 5 is going to be their new touring guitarist. So then you have John Corabi. Here he comes again. In an interview with Backstage Pass Rock News, John Corabi said, let's see what he said here. Like, I want to be accurate with what he said. Just looking at the things the way I look at them, and I can't help but think that they just went for the upgrade in their minds. You do have a history there. The fans are used to that history. Corabi then goes on to say he played most of the guitars on Crue's 1997 record Generation Swine, which, Jay, we talked about this off the air. There is truth to that. You got to remember, Motley was recording Generation Swine with Corabi. He was playing on that record. He wrote a lot of the material on that record. And it was during the recording sessions for Generation Swine that the record label came to them and convinced them to bring Vince back, you know, for a big payday. So there's truth to that. So he brings that up. Then he goes on to mention how DJ Ashba played on both the three new songs on the 2005 compilation Red, White, and Crue and the 2008 record Saints of Los Angeles. Now, I do know DJ Ashba did play the rhythm guitars on Saints of Los Angeles. I don't know how much of the lead playing he may have done or if Mick laid any of the rhythms down. I know DJ Ashba is uncredited on that record, so there's truth to that as well. The Red, White, and Crue stuff, I did not know that. I thought Mick played on it, but he says he didn't. And then I don't know if you're aware of this, Jay, but on the Dirt soundtrack, the new tracks, like, and they did the Like a Virgin cover, the Madonna track, John 5 played on those. So, you know, John Corabi goes on to say, personally, my verdict is I have an opinion. I have a thought on what transpired, I haven't heard anything from Mick. The statement we've all gotten from Motley and their management and whoever's on that side of the camp, blah, 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 I kind of maybe misread that. But anyway, John 5, I think he's a brilliant guitar player. I'm not taking anything away from John because I love the guy to death. He's a guitarist, but I can't help but think when we were doing the Generation Swine record, there was a rub between me and Mick, which transpired during, they had already told me that they were bringing Vince back And their manager said, can you help them finish the record? And I said, yes. And every day they would call me at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And it was Nikki, this guy, Scott Humphrey, who was the producer of Generation Swine, and Tommy. And he goes on to say they were producing the record. And they would call me every day. And they would go, hey, can you come by the studio and play some guitar? And I said, well, as long as Mick is cool with it, sure. Well, every day I'd get to the studio and they just complain like, oh, my God. We had Mick here yesterday at 2 o'clock in the morning. We couldn't get anything out of him and blah, blah, blah. So that was 95. And then they did the record. Blah, blah, blah. Now, I can tell you right now, most of the rhythms on that record were mine. And if Mick was sitting here, he'd go, yeah, most of the guitars were his. So I played it on the Generation Swine record. I don't know if Mick played it on the new Tattoo record. I'm not sure. But I know it was Ashba on Red, White, and Crew on the new songs. And I know on Saints of Los Angeles, it was DJ Ashba. And then I know on the movie The Dirt, the new songs were John 5, blah, blah, blah. So basically, John Karabi, based on all this, is saying that he thinks Motley Crue just got rid of Mick for the upgrade. Dude, my thoughts on it, maybe there's truth to that. But my thing is, like, why say it? I think Motley Crue has done everything to not put that out to the media. You know what I'm saying? Like, DJ Ashba played on Saints of Los Angeles uncredited. Mick Mars is credited. Motley Crue, the members, never have publicly gone out to bash Mick Mars. Whether or not they liked his playing anymore, whether or not they were satisfied with him in the band and things he was bringing to the table, they never publicly, you know, aired the dirt. Why is John Karabi doing it when he hasn't even been in a band in 25 years?
Dude, it makes you wonder. And listen, I'm not sitting here saying that any of the members in Motley Crue are perfect, because let's face it, Tommy Lee can be an asshole. He can be very, you know, arrogant with his, you sure. know, his takes. Nikki Sixx, I mean, he's pretty vocal about.
I love Nikki, but he's a hypocrite.
Okay.
Which I'll get into, dude. You go back and watch videos during when they were doing the 94 record on MTV, where they basically disowned everything they had done in the past. When the VJ said about Hairspray and stuff, and Nikki disowned it all, you know, and then they went back to it. So I just feel, and then he was making fun of Vince, and he gets him back in the band.
It seems.
I mean, Nikki's a hypocrite, but go on.
Well, so what it seems to me is that there is some kind of jealousy there. And I know jealousy is a very, yeah, from John Karabi. And I know jealousy is a very, you know, it can grow and it can become very vicious, you know, when it kind of takes over control of you.
But why though? He hasn't been in the band in 25 years.
I don't know why, but I know that he's like, he's kind of went, I've seen articles where he went after Nikki Sixx saying he wasn't sober and.
Oh, I saw one recently where he said he reached out to them for advice about his son who had a heroin problem and that they never called him back.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, I don't, why is this stuff being aired publicly? I just don't know why. I don't get it.
And I like John Karabi, and that's why it's kind of disturbing to me, because I've always respected him. But the more that he keeps going with this, it's like, it's making him look kind of vain.
And I love John. I hate to use the word, but it's kind of making him look a little pathetic, because it's like, at this point,
is he
living off of that name, Motley Crue? People know you because you were in Motley Crue, but all you're doing is bashing the band. I don't get it. And I'm not saying that what you're saying might not be truthful or have validity to it. I think there's a good possibility that Crue went for the upgrade. Maybe Mick wanted to continue touring, but the bottom line is, we don't know for sure. Why say it? And the guys in Crue never did it. They never aired out anything to bash Mick Mars or say anything bad about the guy. And if anything, the guy's been a soldier and a trooper, having toured all these years with the disease that he has that makes it so difficult to tour. You know, so it's like all they've done is like be supportive of the guy. I don't understand why John Karabi would do this. Like, again, he's telling the truth. He played on Generation Swine. We get it. You know, G.J. Ashba played on Red, White, and Crue, played on Saints of Los Angeles. We get it. John 5 played on the Dirt soundtrack on the new tracks. We get it. But Motley Crue never said anything publicly to say that Mick Mars wasn't playing on these songs. They never said, we don't like Mick's playing anymore. Not one bad thing. The one guy in the band, in fact, that I've never heard any of the other members bash is Mick. They all have bashed Vince at different times. Vince has obviously bashed Nikki at different times. Vince has obviously bashed Tommy at different times. Tommy's bashed Vince at different times. But nobody's bashed Mick. Why is John Karabi bashing him?
Well, I don't think he's bashing him.
Not bashing him, but airing dirty laundry. He's using him. He's using him to get his name in the media, in the news.
Which is crazy because, like I said, it does. It makes him look pathetic. Yeah. Like, dude, come on, John. Be better. Be better.
Don't be bitter. Be better, right? Anyway, brother, that's going to bring us to our next segment, the picks of the week. The picks. And you know what? I'm going to stay on the theme. My pick of the week is a John Corabi record. You know what it is? Take a wild guess.
The live.
I'll tell you what it is. It's the live record he did a couple years ago when he did the Motley Crue 1994 record live. It was recorded in Nashville, Tennessee, I believe. Yeah, live one night in Nashville. Dude, if you haven't checked it out, definitely check it out. My favorite Motley Crue record, arguably, and I say arguably because I can't say definitively, is the 1994 Motley Crue record that they did with John Corabi. Now, and you could argue that they shouldn't have called it Motley Crue because it really was a different band. But Motley Crue never sounded thicker and heavier than they did on that 1994 record with John Corabi. Now, the reason I didn't make that my pick of the week is because I know we've had that as a pick of the week previously on the show. You had it. But I wanted to go to the next best thing. A few years back, I can't remember when it was recorded. I'm trying to find it now. The album came out in 2018. It was recorded live on October 27th, 2015, during a stop on his Motley 94 tour. Now, if you remember, in 2015, John Corabi did an entire tour where he was playing the entire Motley 1994 album front to back, including the bonus tracks like 10,000 Miles Away and that kind of stuff. Maybe Baby Kills too, which was on Quaternary. But yeah, he did the whole record. So in 2018, one of the shows was released as a live album. And if you're a fan of the Motley 1994 record, I highly recommend checking it out. Again, the record is called John Corabi One Night in Nashville, Live 94. That's the name of the record. He plays the entire Motley Crue 1994 record live. It sounds freaking amazing. That's my pick of the week. Check it out. What do you got for us, Jay?
Dude, that's phenomenal. I bet because you know I did the 94 album because that was part of the Red Truck playlist.
Yeah, if anybody listens to the history of our show, when Jay and I were teenagers, he had a red pickup truck when he first got his license. And we would cruise around that pickup truck all the time, just cranking CDs. And, you know, we were born in 76. So in 1994, we were 18. Jay got his license, you know, when he was 16. So, you know, that record was like just constantly in the playlist at that time, you know. And we love that record.
Motley Crue 1994. Definitely one of my favorite Motley Crue records too.
Absolutely. Wow. It's definitely got, it's not only a great record, but it's definitely nostalgic for Jason and I. So check out the live version. Absolutely. What do you got for us?
So my pick of the week, I've actually been holding this in layover for a couple, actually for a couple months. I was going to do this like a while back and we ended up, doing something else because we had talked about it before the show and we kind of wanted to do a kind of similar theme. So I passed on it, but it's a record that I've been listening to a lot this year. It's actually probably going to be in my top five album list. So that more to come on that. Obviously, Aaron and I will be dropping that later before the end of the year.
Yeah, check. You're going to have to check that out. Our blog on our website, sportsandmetal.com. Jason and I are going to be putting our top five records of 2002 out, but go on.
Oh, yeah. So this is probably going to be on there. But anyway, the album is Deceivers by Arch Enemy. Now, anyone that knows me knows that I'm a thrash. I'm a heavier type style music lover, mostly thrash. So I'm not really big on death metal. And I really don't know too much about death metal. But when I listened to this record, this was actually the first Arch Enemy record I ever heard. It's Deceivers. It came out early in the summer. The album's called Deceivers. As I said, it's from the Swedish melodic death metal band Arch Enemy. And let me tell you, dude, I get that it's death metal, but this record is phenomenal from top to bottom. Like, the musicianship is amazing. So what I would argue that, yes, it's melodic death metal, but I see elements of classic metal, 80s glam, New wave, British heavy metal. All of these elements are littered throughout the record. Alyssa White Glues, she's the vocalist. Now, she can do some sick
growls.
Clean vocals, but she also has those guttural vocals. So her clean vocals, it's almost Lizzie Hale-esque, For those of you who don't know, Lizzie Hale is the lead singer of
Hailstorm. Yeah,
Hailstorm. And then I would say her guttural vocals. They're kind of a cross between Randy Blythe from Lamb of God and Alexi Laho from Children of Bodom. But anyway, the album is phenomenal. It kicks ass. There's a track in the Eye of the Storm. It actually, the main riff reminds me, it's very reminiscent of No Easy Way Out by Robert Tepper from Rocky. Everyone knows that song. That's a phenomenal song. And this song, as soon as you hear it, it's like, oh my God, that reminds me of that. And there's another track, One Last Time. It's got a sick main riff, and the solo is definitely Slash. It's definitely infused by Slash. I mean, if you hear it, it's like, oh my God, that's a Slash solo. So to hear that on a death metal record is just amazing to me. I would say it's a well-balanced record, and it's got a lot of 80s vibes. So that's my pick of the week, Deceivers by Arch Enemy.
Awesome. Everybody check that out. Anyway, guys, it's been a great show. Dude, I hope everybody out there enjoyed it. I want to hear comments from people. I'm willing to take all takers on this party argument.
Criticize him. Go at him on Twitter, please.
Go at me. Let's do it.
Please.
But seriously, we hope everybody enjoyed the show. Any comments, we welcome them. Any criticisms, we welcome them as well. Any suggestions for future episodes, we totally welcome that. Again, as Jay mentioned initially, we have a blog that's going to be coming out on our website. We're going to have our top five albums of 2022. Keep an eye out for that. Before we go, I want to remind you again to visit our website, www.sportsandmetal.com. That's where you're going to get all your fix on all things sports and metal. You'll also be able to check out previous episodes of the podcast and our blog. Also, again, a shout out to La Terrain Watches. Visit their website, www.laterrain.com. That's www.la-touraine.com. Use our promo code SNM. That's the letters SNM as in sports and metal. And you're going to save 10% off your purchase. And finally, betus.com. You're going to use our affiliate link, bit.ly/sportsandmetal. You're going to get 125% bonus on your first bet. The link is embedded here. It's going to be embedded on our podcast for the audio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you could check us out. Spotify, Apple Podcast, your mother's ass. But you get the drift. So anyway, guys, we hope you enjoyed the show. As always, rock on.
Peace out.
And that's our show. Tune in next time for more sports and metal. With Jason Voorhees and Aaron Savage.
Ooh, yeah.
Got something to say? Hit us up at sportsandmetal0423@yahoo.com.